Today is June 10th, 2015, and this is episode number 310 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, a man barely alive. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
I would like to point out that we can rebuild you. We can make you better than before.
Faster, stronger?
Faster, stronger. All we need is a Kickstarter and $6 million.
Yeah, I don't think $6 million would cut it anymore, though.
No, probably not. Well, you'd be kind of a cut-rate bionic man.
Kind of like a bionic pinky, maybe.
That's a start. By the way, did you hear that that there's a Bionic Man reboot? I think it's going to be a movie as opposed to a TV show.
I did not hear that, although I would be very interested to see what a modern modern perspective could bring to that concept.
Yes. And of course, thanks to inflation, they did raise the dollar value to make their cyborg, and it's now the $6 billion man.
Right. Interesting. Well, you know, another interesting thing we had this week was WWDC. Oh, we also have a sponsor, Casper.
That's just awesome. I love
the good
Casper.
Folks at Casper. Yeah, I'm pleased as punch that they're sponsoring us.
Now, wait a second.
What?
WWDC is more interesting than converting you into a bionic man?
It's more realistic. More likely to happen.
All right. Okay, fine. Whatever. We can talk about that. Whatever.
In fact, WWDC has provably happened.
That yes it has, and is still happening even as we speak.
Indeed, still happening even as we speak. It's Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference. It's the place where Apple, for the last several years, has introduced new versions of iOS and OS X, and now, of course, we have watchOS.
Yes, we do.
Lots and lots of announcements. It was a long, long keynote, 2 hours and 2 hours and 20 minutes thereabouts.
Yeah, it was surprisingly long for an Apple keynote.
Yeah, Dave noted, Dave Hamilton was in the audience there, and he noted that that he said he called it too long, and he said that it was very, very hot inside the studio. I have to be honest, I didn't feel like it was too long as we were watching it.
Yes, but we weren't in the theater where it was being held, so I can imagine being packed in with all those people and the heat would make it feel too long for Dave. I didn't feel like it was too long when we were watching it. Although when they got to the and one more thing part, if they had just stopped and been done, I would have been totally fine.
Yep, fair enough.
Yeah. But it didn't feel too long to me. It's not like the Microsoft keynote from CES a couple years ago, a few years ago, the last one that Steve Ballmer was at, where I started tweeting from the middle of it, send in help. we need an airlift. Someone get us an evac.
Yeah, but that was just a bad keynote.
That was a bad.
I mean, that keynote could have been half its duration, half its actual duration, and still have been too long and awful.
That's absolutely right.
It wasn't awful because it was long.
It was just awful.
It was both awful and long.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was no Samsung keynote.
Oh, yeah. That was the one where I thought that we really were going to get the National Guard bringing in choppers to airlift people out.
Yeah. Yeah. Nonetheless, Apple showed off OS X El Capitan and iOS 9 and watchOS 2.
Right. At the rate that Apple's introducing new stuff for Apple Watch, I figure by the time fall rolls around, we'll be on watchOS 4.
I could. No.
Oh, come on. That was funny.
It was funny, but Apple will actually release Watch OS 2 this fall.
Yes.
Thus belying your very joke.
Tough crowd.
I know. Plus, you know, mostly pedantic.
Mostly.
mostly. So, you know, what's going to be interesting is in a few years, we'll have CarOS too. I mean, at some point here, Apple's going to have to actually consider doing multiple developer events. There's just a lot of stuff going on.
I hadn't really thought about that, but yes, you're right. At some point, they're going to have to probably break out developer events. So they'll have like WWDC and WWDC Mobile.
Yeah, yeah. There's all kinds of ways they could break it up. But it's becoming a very crowded event. There were new services announced. There was new versions of the OS that were shown. There's Apple Music was unveiled. We saw Siri Proactive. We saw improvements to Spotlight. There was all kinds of things.
Yes.
That were announced, and it made for a very, very busy show. And considering the fact that that Apple is selling this event out in minutes, what was this last one?
Okay, events like this, I don't really think you can say sell out in minutes anymore because they do the lottery thing now.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right, but the last one that they actually just sold tickets for sold out in minutes.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know, something ridiculous, like 3 minutes, 5 minutes.
And, with that in mind, the problem is that these events are massive disruptions for Apple's executives and for the engineering team.
Yeah, they're important disruptions, but they are massive disruptions nonetheless.
Yeah. And because it's the engineers that are teaching teaching and presenting the courses during WWDC, it's the executives who, of course, are doing the keynote. A couple of weeks ago, into that. And this is in addition to the massive team whose job is to put it all together.
Right.
In addition to them, you've got the executives spending time preparing what's going to be done. You've got their the people that report to them giving them reports so that they know what they can include and show. And then you've got, all the engineering teams and all the engineering managers who actually have to do these, the courses. They have to put work into what they're going to be teaching too.
Right.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of disruption.
And it's more than a week of disruption for Apple.
Oh, for sure. I'm totally guessing here, but I would guess that you're probably losing a good, 2 weeks of most of the most important people in engineering, marketing, and the executives.
Right. And then there will be other people that are associated with all of this where it's going to cut into their time as well. It's a big disruption. I think that's a great way to describe it.
Yeah.
But also very necessary. And I'm glad Apple does this every year.
Well, yeah, yeah. But if Apple were to actually break it down in two, it wouldn't just be the same work cut in half. It would probably be more like, two events that were three quarters of the work. Because that's just kind of the way these things end up going. So
sure.
I don't know how Apple would do more than one event, but it really does seem like we're getting closer and closer to needing to do more than one event,
or at least a much bigger venue.
Well, much bigger venue, yeah. That wouldn't cut down on the size of the keynote much.
No, the keynote would still be a Gandhi length event.
Yeah, but it would possibly, accommodate more developers.
Right.
Which is important in and of itself.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Well, my guess is that we have at least a couple more years where Apple can have, 5,000 developers?
And, yeah, currently.
And long keynotes and people complaining about how there's so much that they're trying to cram in.
Right. So the most important thing the thing that I thought was most exciting would have to be Siri Proactive.
Siri Proactive Assistant was really impressive to see and very welcome, because Google Now is so cool, But having something similar to that on iOS before now wasn't an option.
Well, Google Now exists on iOS, but it couldn't exist in the same way as it does on Android, because
right, that's one, what I mean.
Yeah. It can't sit in between you and the operating system to the main interface. It's not going to sit on your lock screen or anything like that. Apple has been sort of heading this way for a while. The Notification Center in iOS 8 certainly had some Google Now-like qualities, but it lagged pretty far behind. Siri Proactive is, I guess, Siri Proactive Assistant, right?
Yeah, mostly pedantic.
Mostly. It has a lot going for it, and it really does help narrow the gap with Google Now. It doesn't close it, but it narrows it.
No, and I don't think it's going to totally close that gap, because that, I believe, would involve Apple backtracking on their really firm stance on privacy.
Right. So, what Google, just to refresh those listeners who may have forgotten, what Google Now does is, it's Google taking all that stuff they know about you, which is all of the things. From snooping through your email, from reading through your calendars, from reading your Google Docs, to your search history, to tracking every single site that you log into with a Google login. For Android users, it's what they've done on their apps. For Chromebook users, it's everything that they've typed and viewed on their Chromebooks, and where they've taken all these devices and how long they were there and what other Android users they were with, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's Google taking this information and actually using it for your benefit. So, they'll kick things to you proactively, if you'll pardon the use of the word, in a way that's designed to be very helpful. Like, for instance, noticing that you drive somewhere every day at this time and telling you that you need to leave early because there's going to be because the traffic is heavy.
Right. And it sounds like that's something that Proactive Assistant will be able to do as well. But other things that Google Now does, it's not going to be able to do. I love the example that you have tossed out before about your friend who searched for a band on his Android device, and then like a month later gets a message
in Google Now
saying, hey, this band that you're interested in, they'll be in town next week.
Yeah, and with quick links to venue information, ticket information. And the same thing, he actually had the same thing happen with an album. So a band he had looked up released a new album. He didn't know anything about it, but it popped up in Google Now saying that this band had released an album. That's useful. It's really, really cool.
That's very cool.
But it's not something that Apple can match. This is getting back to your point. Because Apple isn't snooping through our emails. Apple doesn't have a search engine to track our searches. Apple isn't going through our AppleWorks documents that are online through iCloud. Apple has put this wall up saying that there's stuff about you that's none of our business, and we don't want to know any of that stuff. Right. And that's good for those of us who care about privacy.
Right, but it does limit just how deeply into our lives Siri's going to be able to go to help us out. I'm okay with that trade-off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's a lot that Siri's Proactive Assistant is going to be able to do. There's things like it can link to your car. So I'm assuming that means a car that has a Bluetooth connectivity system in it. So when you get in your car, it can trigger all different sorts of things to happen.
Right.
And then the thing that you already mentioned, where you always go a certain place at a certain time, and you get a notification letting you know traffic is heavy, so you need to head out early.
Right. And Apple is doing all this, and what they've said very specifically, so it was interesting. We've had, of course, Tim Cook talk about the importance of privacy on numerous occasions at various public events and in interviews and that sort of thing, right?
Yep.
But what we had in this keynote was Apple being quite aggressive and saying that we're protecting your privacy. And in the case of Siri Proactive Assistant, Apple said that the personal things that Siri Proactive Assistant is gathering about you stays on the device.
I like that.
Well, I do too. There, again, there's the trade-off. I don't think it will ever be quite as useful as Google Now can be, but it also doesn't involve Apple selling me to advertisers.
Right. Right. Which goes back to what I said, where I'm okay with this because I'd rather have a little more privacy.
Right. But I am happy that Apple is narrowing the gap. As we said, Apple probably can't close the gap, but Apple is narrowing it. And that narrow gap strikes the right balance so far for me. You know, we haven't actually used this thing yet.
But based on what we know, it looks like it strikes the right balance for us.
Yeah, between privacy and protecting my information and actually giving me useful information before I ask for it.
Yes.
Hence the word proactive in the name.
Right.
Yeah, and these are good things. And it was really, really exciting to see that. We'd gotten some of it leaked ahead of time, but it was great to see it. Can't wait for it to come to iOS 9. I wish Apple would add it to OS 10 as well. Apple probably will.
They probably will. When they do it, they need to address the problems that are really bothering me right now. Like when I'm at my desk and I get a phone call, my telephone rings, my iPhone, both of my iPads, and my Mac will ring as well. If I have my other Mac awake, that means two Macs ring.
Well, to be fair, why don't you turn that off on every device that you don't want it on?
The thing is, I do want it on these other devices because there are times when I'm going to answer my phone from, say, my iPad. And there you go. There's a phone ringing in the background now because one of my devices, the ringer or the speaker wasn't muted. And I didn't catch it.
Yeah, but I mean, how is Apple supposed to fix this?
They can use Bluetooth. They can use proximity. When I'm near my computer, then I can set, when I'm within a certain range of my computer, this is the device that should ring.
All right.
And if they can address that, then the other proactive assistant sort of things can happen as we want them as well.
And that's all part of, just for the record, that's part of handoff, not part of proactive assistant.
But proactive assistant will be able to use handoff.
Yes.
If true. If it's running on your Mac as well as your iOS device.
Right.
Mostly pedantic.
Yes. But that's okay.
Yeah.
So we, okay. I think we both like what we saw in Siri Proactive Assistant.
Yes, I'm really looking forward to this. These are features that I have wanted on my iPhone for a very long time, and I'm thinking this will get my iPad yet another step closer to being my knowledge navigator. If you hadn't picked up on this, I'm really enamored with the idea of Knowledge Navigator, even after all these years.
And this was a device that John Sculley laid out in a vision in, like, I think 1990.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
89 or 90. I think it was 90.
Yeah, and we're getting closer. Every year, Apple gets us a little bit closer to that.
Yep, Steve Jobs probably would not admit that that's the case.
No, I'm sure he would not if he were here.
Be that as it may, we also both liked the fact that iOS 9 is going to get thinner, so to speak, both the operating system and apps. Apple has reduced the amount of space needed for over-the-air updates from, 4.6 gigs down to 1.3?
Yeah, something crazy. Yeah.
Which is terrific.
And for developers, they're going to be able to trim down their app sizes as well. So that this will be good news for people that have lower storage capacity iPhones and iPads.
Yeah. So what will happen is that when the app installs, it'll only install the components needed for that hardware and not for all the other hardware, which is what currently happens.
Right. And I think that's absolutely awesome. That's how it should be. So I'm glad that Apple is giving us that feature. Yeah.
That was definitely good.
How about security in iOS 9? Just on the thing that most people notice right away is that once you start running iOS 9, your 4-digit passcode is going to have to change because Apple is switching us to 6-digit passcodes.
That's exciting.
I think that's very exciting because a 6-digit passcode is exponentially more difficult to decipher than a 4-digit code.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. I bet the NSA loves that.
Oh, I bet they do. And when that feature was revealed, I'm just sure that there are people at Apple saying, "Take that NSA. Take that FBI."
Yep.
You want to get into our devices? All right. How about if we throw you a 6-digit passcode instead? How do you like them, Apples?
This is just going to increase the call on that side of the fence for them to be able to have a backdoor access.
Right. And Tim Cook is continuing with his crusade, and I'm using that term in a positive way, his crusade to protect our privacy and security by pushing for the government to not adopt requirements that would put backdoors into our software and our devices.
Right.
Yes.
So Casper.com/ACM.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know, I wax poetic about Casper a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I just have to say, again, my sleep patterns, as someone that's had very, very bad insomnia for a very long time, have improved because I have a Casper mattress.
And that Casper mattress was found at Casper.com/ACM.
Mm-hmm.
Where so what this is what these guys do. They make, these guys and girls, I should say.
They make
foam mattresses.
Yes, and they use different types of foam and layer them together.
Yes, so that you are both supported and not enveloped and not hot.
Yeah, it's really great. So, you know, you hop in your bed and you're just comfortable.
Yeah, I'm wishing I was there now.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, I'm honestly a little bit sleepy today.
Well, you know, once we finish recording, we can have the interns wrap up the post-show stuff.
Oh,
and
excellent.
Yeah, and then you can head back over to your place.
I can take a nap. Oh, that'd be fantastic. Right. Anyway, so Casper makes these mattresses, and they've got a direct-to-the-customer business model where everything they sell is from their website. And, you know, no showroom, which means that you're not paying that showroom cost, and they're priced accordingly. So. Yes. Like a queen size mattress, $850 retail. But if you use the discount code ACM, coincidentally, it stands for Apple Context Machine, you can get $50 off. And so now it's going to be only $800.
Which is even better, especially considering that if you go and buy a comparable mattress somewhere else, it's going to cost you more than $1,000.
Oh, yeah. Easy. Yeah, they deliver this thing in a box. Box that Jeff is often quipped was developed with Time Lord technology, because it does appear the contents are bigger on the inside than the box is, whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah. Brian, you're totally screwing up your nerd cred today. People,
well,
it's
I
bigger
am,
it's on the inside.
The,
Time Lord technology.
Here's why. Because my inner nerd actually rebels at that idea, because it's not the box that's bigger on the inside. It's the fact that it contains something that is bigger than the volume of the box.
Wait, you do understand with Time Lord technology, the box is merely a representation in our dimension of a doorway that goes...
Yes, but the things inside the TARDIS are not bigger than the TARDIS.
No, they're not.
Right, but Casper mattress is in fact bigger than the box that it's shipped in.
This is like the best Casper mattress commercial ever.
Mostly pedantic.
Mostly.
But anyway, so this thing shows up on your doorstep in this box, and then you pull it out, and it expands and becomes this mattress in like no time at all. Minutes.
Right. From the time you cut the box open to the time you can be curling up on your bed and sleeping, 5 minutes.
Yeah. It's awesome. I love this mattress. I'm so happy they're sponsoring us. We'd like you to check them out. Casper.com/ACM. Discount code of ACM will get you $50 off. It's free shipping. If you need a mattress, this is the mattress to get.
Yes, absolutely the mattress to get.
Absolutely love it.
Also, Time Lord technology.
Metal. Metal is not Time Lord technology. Metal is Apple technology.
It is. Metal, for those of you that don't know what we're talking about, this was introduced with iOS 8, and it's a way that Apple has of putting together like software layers so that the operating system and the applications, they can work more efficiently with the main processor in your computer and with the graphics processor as well. That's like a really simplified explanation.
And what it means in practical terms is that you get better graphics. You get better graphics out of the hardware that you have.
And you get better overall performance.
Yes.
Yeah. So, which is so fantastic. You get more, better, faster.
Yes. Kind of like the $6 million man, but without the man or the $6 million. And the way what Apple announced at WWDC is that they're bringing Metal to OS X. So now our Macs are going to be able to tap into this too.
Yes, so that means when OS X El Capitan is running on your Mac, it should run faster and more efficiently than previous versions of OS X. So
when it's doing intensive graphics.
Well, and other things, because the graphics processor gets handed off to the main processor so that it can handle tasks that would otherwise wait for the main processor. So if the GPU, the graphics processing unit, is not being used, it can be used by the main processor as a supplementary chip.
Fair enough. And
mostly pedantic.
There are lots of companies, including Adobe, shockingly, Adobe has committed to supporting Metal in After Effects, Premiere After Effects, as well as the rest of the Creative Cloud suite. We've got lots of game engines, including the Unreal engine will be supporting Metal on the Mac. Blizzard plans to support Metal with its upgrade. Actually, most of the top game makers that make stuff for the Mac have all committed to supporting Metal,
which is really cool. So when you're running something that runs at the system level, like the Finder, you'll see performance improvements. And then for apps that have been updated to support Metal, you will see substantial performance improvements there as well.
Yeah, and these performance improvements will actually help developers too, because it's going to be easier for them to tap into this stuff and apply effects, do all these various things that go into making a game. So it helps them on the development side and then turns around and runs better for you. That's fantastic.
That's absolutely fantastic. I'm really looking forward to this, and I'm really glad that Apple decided to expand the Metal platform to include OS X.
Yes. Yes, that is a very, 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 very good thing. Now, let's see here. So I would actually, by the way, so like my favorite announcement was Proactive, or Siri Proactive Assistant. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I think that the Metal announcement is probably the next most important. Certainly my next favorite, but it's probably the next most important as well.
I think Metal was a very important announcement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good stuff. But then Apple also announced that they announced a new version of the Swift programming language.
Right, which they introduced last year at WWDC.
Right, and it's just become like the most quickly adopted programming language, like in the history of programming languages.
Which is,
unless you want to go back something to like the 50s when you instantaneously had 100% adoption rate because there were
no other languages. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, other than that, Apple has seen some astounding adoption rates for Swift, and the company announced Swift 2 with, various improvements that are for the developers. But Apple also announced that it's going to go open source.
That was huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Swift will be released, or Swift 2 will be released to the open source community for OS 10, for iOS, and for Linux.
And for Linux, yeah. And when Apple says Apple is releasing it for as open source, sort of. Whole thing is not being made open source. There are aspects of it that are going to be open source so that they can be used for open source development. But it's not like Apple's giving up control of Swift.
That's true. And this is how Apple does open source. They take core elements, give those to the open source community, but the stuff that they really want to maintain control over, they hold tight to their chest.
Right.
But still, the parts that they're releasing are going to be very important for the open source community.
Yes.
And I think ultimately will lead to faster and better overall improvements to the Swift... I keep wanting to say platform, but programming language. And I think we'll see people that otherwise would not have been interested in working with Swift taking another look, because now that we have this whole open source element to it, it takes away, at least for some people, the concerns over getting locked into a proprietary platform.
Yeah, and this is probably aimed a lot at the enterprise market.
Yeah, if John Martellaro was here, he would say this is aimed clearly at the scientific market, but. Bless his heart.
Yes, absolutely. And the scientific community will benefit from this, but it's the enterprise market where Apple actually might be interested in seeing some Swift adoption, because if Swift is being used to make enterprise apps, it's going to be a lot easier for those same enterprises to make apps for that run on iPhones and iPads.
Right. So I bet IBM is totally digging this announcement.
Yeah, IBM may have even encouraged it or helps support the idea.
Sure, I could see that happening.
One way or another, it's a big move for Apple. They've said some other things will be open source. WebKit has been open source for a long time. The mock kernel has been open source for a long time. Apple does have a track record here. Wasn't FaceTime supposed to go open source?
I was just about to say that.
FaceTime and iMessage, right?
And neither have.
Yeah, neither have. But I think Swift 2 will.
Yeah, well, Apple even laid out the time frame. So by the end of the year, the three major components that they're going to make open source will be.
Right. And that's good.
That's very good. Yeah.
So now back to Google, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
I've been arguing for a couple of years now that Apple is making a leapfrog effort for Google to cut into their search business, to leapfrog their search business.
Oh, sure.
Their search business.
Yeah, I think I often say sidestep, but leapfrog, sidestep, whatever. Yes, you are right.
And we saw some more of that with Spotlight. I mean, kind of. Google doesn't do a lot of searching of our hard drives yet.
Yet.
Unless it's Chromebook. But what Apple is doing is continuing to make Spotlight, particularly on the Mac, more useful. And the more useful Spotlight is on your Mac, the less people will need Google. And in particular, what they did, they've added some natural language filtering into Spotlight. So like the example that they showed us was... something along the lines of show me or like pictures from Brian, actually is the name they used. Pictures from Brian of El Capitan.
And then it brings back the photos that are on your computer that meet that criteria.
Yeah, that came from someone named Brian that are of El Capitan.
Right. Or you could say something like, show me photos from my Rocky Mountain National Park vacation.
Yeah, or show me photos of my Rocky Mountain Park vacation with Angela.
Right. Yeah, and then you get the family photos.
Then you get the family photos. And that's good stuff.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. Again, this isn't specifically tackling Google, because you know Google search business doesn't search your hard drive.
No, but this makes you think more about how you're using your Mac and how Apple is giving you information.
Yeah, it makes Spotlight more useful. It makes it more of the thing that you can go to. Right?
Right.
You know, the more you think about going to Spotlight for search, the better as far as Apple is concerned, because it's taking search data and search hits away from Google.
Right. And even if Spotlight is reaching out to Google to get search results in the background for you, mm-hmm. they're still presented as Spotlight search results.
It's true. I think at some point Apple will actually not do that.
No, I think you're right. I think at some point Apple is going to be able to source the internet searches that they need to do without relying on Google.
Right.
Or Yahoo or Bing or whoever.
Right. Now, we also saw a lot of stuff going on with WatchOS, which, of course, is the OS that powers Apple Watch.
Right. Yeah, so we got the news about the non-surprise news about native apps coming.
Yes, that's huge. So what that means is that people can just make an app that is designed to run on your Apple Watch, the end, as opposed to what we have now, which is that the apps available for Apple Watch are all companion apps that are actually attached to an iPhone app.
Right. And for some people, that distinction doesn't matter. But for the people that are really clamoring for the native apps, this is really a big thing. And I'm really looking forward to what we're going to see. Apps are going to be able to take advantage, or they're going to have access to all the sensors in your watch. So that's kind of cool. So picture having native health and fitness tracking apps that are just on your watch that are tapping directly into the sensors, collecting all kinds of valuable data for you.
Right. But we shouldn't skip over the fact that that these apps will be running faster. They should be able to get data faster.
Yes.
The apps are going to be able to play video, which right now they cannot. Play video. Access and therefore use the Taptic Engine, which right now they cannot.
Mm-hmm.
Access the sensors, as you just said, which right now they cannot. These are all a lot of really... This is going to better unleash the developer community on the Apple Watch product.
Yes, it is. Yeah, and I think it's really exciting what can come out of this.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm looking forward to it. I say I hope so like I doubt it. I definitely hope so, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes out of it. Now, I believe I was doing live coverage. Live coverage for me is an interesting thing because I have to type what I'm hearing and seeing. I don't always remember it all.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand it, watch faces are going to be opened up to developers too.
Yes, they are. So they'll be able to make complications and their own custom watch faces as well.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. I don't like the watch faces that come the watch faces that come with the Apple Watch that Apple has designed. I don't like them. Some of them are very pretty, but I don't find the pretty ones useful, and I don't think the useful ones are attractive.
Like that would be a problem.
The one with the butterfly. It's very attractive.
Yeah, but it's not something that I'm interested in. I know that there are people that love that, and the one where you get to see the sunrise, sunset little graph thing. And
I like that too, but it doesn't have enough for me. It doesn't have enough information.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And the watch faces, the analog watch faces, they're all ugly. I don't care for them.
Well, that should change this fall when watchOS 2 comes out.
Indeed, and I'm very much looking forward to that.
People that are concerned about the, what I think really is overhyped fears about what happens if someone steals your Apple Watch or you lose your Apple Watch, that's addressed also, because watchOS 2 is going to include the ability to lock down your watch. So, yeah, so that'll be there too. So,
yeah, that is a good thing. I find it interesting that using my iPhone for an Apple Pay transaction requires my fingerprint, Touch ID.
Mm-hmm.
But using my watch, my Apple Watch, for an Apple Pay transaction requires no such thing.
Well, it makes sense to me, because when you put the watch on and then unlock it, because you have to have your a lock code set on your watch to have Apple Pay,
mm-hmm.
it's now tracking your heartbeat. And so as soon as the watch is taken away from your wrist, it instantly locks.
All right, but if I'm a bad guy and I'm able to get someone's passcode, I can take the Apple Watch, put it on, put in that passcode, and now go spin, spin, spin. Couldn't do that unless I cut off the guy's finger with the iPhone.
Yeah, but if you're in a situation where that's happening, you have bigger concerns, and they probably have your real credit card by now anyhow.
Yeah, maybe.
Still, I totally get what you're saying, and I think it is a valid concern.
I kind of wish, and I understand why this is not the case, but I wish there was a Touch ID sensor on the Apple Watch somewhere. So that you actually had to touch it. That would make me feel a little more secure. Mind you, I use it. I love it.
Yep. I use Apple Pay on my Apple Watch all the time.
Yeah, likewise. Likewise. It just seems like a discrepancy. I know that I'm being vague about it. It just seems like there's a discrepancy in the level of security required between making a transaction on your iPhone and making a transaction on your Apple Watch.
Well, yes, I don't think there's, in the grand scheme of things, that much of a difference between the security levels, because as far as how secure Apple Pay is on your iPhone, everything that can be worked around if you try hard enough. So I think what it comes down to in this case is probably more a psychological thing, because you're taking the step of authenticating for Apple Pay at the time of transaction with your phone, but you're authenticating for Apple Pay at the time you unlock your watch with Apple Watch.
Right. Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. I also liked, by the way, the charging mode.
Mm-hmm.
Where the display goes in landscape mode when it's being charged.
Oh, right. So now you can have your watch on your nightstand as your clock.
As your
bedside clock. And it the alarms will wake you up in the morning or the night or whenever it is that you need alarms to wake you up.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I wonder how many of the Apple Watch stands that have already been announced won't work right in that mode.
That's true. That is entirely true. But, you know, this was definitely a mode designed for the watch being on its side.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, sitting prostrate on your, prostrate's not the right word, but sitting sideways on your you know, desk, table, nightstand, whatever.
Right, right.
Well, we should also talk about Apple Music.
Yeah, I guess we should. As long as we're here. My Jedi instincts tell me that even though Apple hasn't had a big success in the streaming music market yet, I mean, iTunes Radio is doing fine.
It's doing fine.
But
maybe.
Yeah, but that's it. It's just doing fine.
It's probably actually,
I think
it's
Apple,
probably not doing fine.
Well, it's doing fine enough that Apple hasn't killed it yet.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So, but then we have Apple Music that's coming out later this month. I think it's probably going to do very well, or at least it's going to do well enough that it can reasonably compete with Spotify and Pandora.
For sure. It'll probably narrow the market down closer to those three, for what that's worth.
Sure. Yeah.
But so we have, what do we have here? We have, first of all, Apple Music will play your music, music that you have, be it on iTunes Match in the cloud or the music that you have on your device.
Right.
And it will give you artist pages now that'll have, you know, images of the band and whatnot when you pull up an artist.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be doing Beats One, which is the radio station that's being headed by Zane Lowe.
Right, from BBC Radio yep. One.
And this is going to be a global 24/7 radio station that's produced out of, if I remember correctly, LA, New York, and London.
That sounds right. Yep. And it's going to be more like a traditional radio station in that instead of having automated playlists, you have actual DJs that are putting together the music shows.
Yes. And that is, I like that. I like that. I
like that too. I think it's a great idea.
I kind of doubt that I'm going to be into the music that they play. I don't know this yet. And I mean, what I'd really like to see, I'd like Apple to do a, you know, something like Sirius or XM Radio, one of the two of them.
Well, they're the same thing.
That's true. They are. Where they have different radio shows for different genres.
Yeah, I think that would be really cool. And it's something that they could do. I mean, it could be that they're launching with a limited selection of genres. And then as this grows, they start expanding and adding another genre.
What we were told is that it's going to be Beats One, a radio station that's going to be 24/7, you know, created by these DJs. And, you know, so you've got that live human feel and everything. We did not hear that there would be multiple shows. We heard there would be a show, a radio station.
Right. Yes, that's what we heard. So my assumption is for now, that's what it is. A single station that's running 24/7.
Yeah. And here's an interesting aspect of this to me. I'm very enamored of the idea of being able to listen to the same music as you. As someone in Australia, mm-hmm. you know, they were all listening to the same thing at the same time. You know, someone in China, someone in Vietnam, someone in Australia, someone in Brazil, someone in New York, someone in Hawaii, right? We're all listening to the same thing at the same time. That's just sort of like this community. I mean, that's just, you know, it kind of brings everybody close together.
Right.
But at the same time, it will have an homogenization effect on music. And that to me is a downside. It's kind of like MTV. You know, MTV was essentially shoving the same music down everybody's eyeballs.
Right.
When it still played music videos and when it was a tastemaker.
Right. Yep. Back in the day.
And both of those things, you know, the good and the bad, they both exist at the same time.
Of course, yeah. But you know, it may be one of those things where you have Beats One, and then you have other, we'll call them homogenized channels, coming up from other services.
Yeah, well, I mean, and Apple, you know, there are plenty of internet radio stations on the air.
Right, and it's a safe bet that with Beats One coming and the potential success that it will have, that the competitors are working on creating their own 24/7 internet radio, where it's actually radio style programming as opposed to what they're calling internet radio now, which is pretty much automated playlists.
Well, but that said, there are plenty of terrestrial radio stations that are on the internet. Like there's countless.
Yeah, that's true.
So, you know, like someone in China can listen to my local NPR station if they so choose, unless of course, actually I shouldn't use China because the Great Wall probably Black Sabbath.
Let's say in London.
In London. Someone in London can listen to my local NPR station. You know, or I could listen to, you know, some kind of psychedelic alternative station that's, that, you know, is from some tiny college station in Peoria.
Which sounds actually pretty cool to me.
Yeah, I kind of doubt that, though. But whatever, it could be. You know, it could be.
It could be.
There could be some psychedelic alternative station in Peoria. But anyway, so it's, you know, Apple isn't reinventing the wheel with this stuff, but Apple is bringing it together all in one roof, and they're doing it for a really good price, $9.99 a month, which does seem to be that level that people are willing to pay.
Mm-hmm.
Better yet,
$14.99 a month for you and your family, up to six people.
Yeah, up to six, that, which that's a really compelling price.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And it's launching, I think, with what, 30 million tunes?
Yeah, something like that.
Which puts it at the high end of all the services. If you remember, Amazon's Prime Music thingy launched with like a million tunes. I'm sure they have more now, but they launched with a million songs.
Yeah, but launching with 30 million, you're coming out swinging.
Yeah, definitely coming out swinging. And then there's Apple is also doing Connect with Apple Music, and this is going to allow artists to connect with fans by uploading, you know, behind the scenes content, maybe B-sides, interviews, spoken word performances, I don't know, whatever they want.
Oh, you know, so William Shatner's going to have a channel, is what you're saying.
He might. He could. He could. And that, I think, is a really good thing. And then Apple is also kind of taking a page from Amazon by making it possible for unsigned artists to distribute their music directly through Apple Music.
So that's pretty cool.
That is cool. It kind of, to me, begs the question of how do you deal with discovery, right? One of the, you know, Amazon by enabling authors to self-publish, Amazon has unleashed the creativity of hordes of people who never well have written a book, or if they did, we wouldn't have ever seen it because the publishing industry, you know, either ignored it because it was terrible, or didn't see it, or, you know, just the right people at the right time didn't see it, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right?
Right.
Amazon has done this thing, and a lot of that thing is good. But at the same time, if you've ever tried to go wade through self-published crap, most of it's crap. And finding the self-published stuff that's good is difficult. So Apple is doing that same sort of thing for unsigned artists, and that's a very good thing, but it's going to be really interesting to see how discovery takes place, because the, you know, this online discovery of books, movies, and music is still very, very difficult.
It is. And I don't think anyone has really cracked that yet.
No.
You know, there's something about discovery when you go into a physical store that we just can't match yet online.
Nope, we can't. And Apple is doing the curated playlist. This is what Beats has been doing all along, human curated playlist. That's not a change, but Apple is certainly going to be putting marketing muscle behind it now, which is not something the company did with the Beats brand.
That's true. Yeah. So that has the potential to help boost Apple's streaming music offering too.
Right. Now, we should note that Apple Music isn't designed necessarily to make a profit, pure and simple, for Apple. Apple Music is a product designed to make the Apple ecosystem more attractive.
Which is pretty much the modus operandi of Apple.
Right. And Apple Music was also designed to not gut the music industry, because Apple has been concerned about the health of the music industry, as we were told from a controlled leak, it's why Apple was going to be very careful and deliberate about how it entered the streaming game, because it didn't want to overnight cut the revenues from iTunes, which the labels and their artists enjoy.
Sure. So this looks like Apple has found their happy medium so that they can expand into this market without just wreaking havoc everywhere else.
Yeah.
Which is actually really impressive, because a lot of other companies would have just gone in and essentially dropped a nuclear bomb on the market and not thought a thing of it.
Yep, it's true. So Apple Music is here, or it will be here at the end of this month. It's been announced. It's going to be interesting to see how it works out. I really do think that Apple may have a success on its hands with this version. You know, the difference, you know, Apple has this track record of not doing streaming music well. In fact, Apple has a track record of having scored a home run with the original iTunes Store. Mm-hmm. But since then, having ceded, mindshare to companies like Pandora and Spotify and RDO and all the other ones, because the company wasn't jumping on the streaming bandwagon. And now that Apple is, I think this is going to be a success.
I think so too. Yeah, and clearly buying Beats was a move to make Apple's own streaming music service a success.
And that was actually my point that I completely lost track of when I was talking there, is the fact that while Apple doesn't have this great track record, the company went and found people who could do it.
Right. And that's another thing that Apple does. They find the experts.
Yeah. Yeah, and those people came along with the purchase of their company. I'm talking about Trent Reznor and Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine.
Mm-hmm.
And they've all stayed with Apple since the buyout of Beats Music and Beats headphones.
True. Yeah, that's kind of interesting. So these people knew that the deal was you get the company and you get us.
Right, and they've stuck with it. And they have been working on the service since then, and the result is Apple Music. And I don't know. Let's see what happens with this, but I think it's going to work. I think I think Apple's going to have a success on its hands.
I agree. I think Apple finally is in a position where they're going to have a successful online music streaming service.
Indeed.
Yep.
Indeed. And as we noted before, Casper was our sponsor. We appreciate that. Casper.com/ACM. ACM is a discount code that'll get you $50 off a mattress.
I love saving money.
Indeed.
And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. And hey, thanks for listening.
Indeed. Our content is written by the good people of the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, the bass is by Boom, recorded just for us. And that's all for this week.
We can make you stronger. We can totally do it.
You want to say stay subscribed?
I do.
You did?
No, I didn't. Yeah. But I'm going to.
Yeah,
hey, no. Stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.
We can still make you stronger.
Yeah, no one will hear any of that. I'll take all that out.